Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. A new project from artist and director David Shapiro may be called Untitled Pizza Movie, but it's not exactly a movie. It's 7 episodes, and it feels like a mashup of a documentary, a personal video diary, and an essay about a changing New York City. Let's just say this is a film that will pluck at the heartstrings of any New Yorker who kept a pocket full of tokens. And it's also about much more than pizza. The project began in the 90s when David and his friend Leeds, both young, smart, a bit brash, born and bred New Yorkers, decided to film themselves on a journey to find the best New York slice. And they had a bit of a hustle going on. They did things like sort of suggest they were a camera crew from the Food Channel in order to get into some of the city's most famous pizza joints. Here's a clip of Leeds from that old footage talking about the project.
We go into these places and we're like voyeurs or something. I'm pizza men. You know, we were like prostitutes. We can be anyone they want us to be, you know, and in fact, we are. And I've gone through moments of crisis after the shows where I have actually believed that I was who I said I was. And I'm kind of proud of that.
The footage was also intended to capture a changing city as gentrification starts to alter the landscape of neighborhoods Leeds and David lived and romped around in. Decades later, the two friends lost touch, but after learning that Leeds had died from complications due to alcoholism, David decides to revisit that old pizza footage, which has been in storage for years. He also decides to track down one of the most memorable pizza makers he and Leeds encountered, a culinary genius and a headline-making con man named Andrew Bellucci. The final product is a 7-part series that is part New York history, part eulogy, and part biography and what it takes to reinvent yourself in New York City. The film showed at Sundance 2020, and now Untitled Pizza Movie has a run at the Metrograph from February 26th to March 14th and is viewable with the purchase of a Metrograph digital membership. David, welcome to the show.
Allison, thank you so much, and what a wonderful, great introduction.
And full disclosure, David and I have known each other forever and a day. So, and I have vague memories.
That's true. So it's a special treat to speak with you, really. And you really did a great job of summing it up. Wonderful.
It's a little bit hard to sum up, which is why it's so interesting. So let's go get to some of the basics, and then we can talk about some of the broader themes. So you and Leeds begin filming this project, Eat to Win. What was Eat to Win? How did you guys get the idea for it?
Well, you know, this was the early 90s, right, which is a time of self-invention, of do-it-yourself, and of, well, punk rock. And so we knew and saw our city was being gentrified. And like all New Yorkers, we were pre-sentimental. We were in love with the place, and we saw it being wiped out, kind of, changed. And we wanted to preserve it in videotape. And so at the time, The Wiz had a 30-day return policy, so we bought a camera, shot for 30 days, and then returned it, and then did it again. And we just wanted it to be fun and alive and, you know, eat some good food at the same time for free. So we'd show up with the camera and say, hey, we're Eat to Win, which didn't exist. And maybe it was one of those things where if we made it, maybe it could have, but it ended up being really weird because we made it and it wasn't straight. And in spite of it, or maybe because of it with a wink, I think we captured something that I'm really glad we did, because years later, when you look at something, you can repurpose it and glean meaning in it. And this is a really lost city now. And it was not the same then. It had more, I don't know, soul. And I think that I hope that it can return to that. This moment seems to be a big recheck for who we are and where we live and how and why and what this place can and can't, shouldn't be.
Why was pizza a good lens to examine New York past and present?
Well, for one thing, I love pizza. I mean, it may well be my kryptonite. You know, I can't help myself. It's like my mutant power. I can eat five or six slices. And in fact, I gained 20 pounds making Eat to Win. And I knew I would gain another 20 pounds making Untitled Pizza Movie. But pizza is just a great, humble touchstone. I mean, it's an iconic New York thing, right? Mm-hmm. And every neighborhood has a pizzeria. And it just seemed like a means to an end. First, we tried all the food in New York, but that obviously is daunting. And this was before all the food shows. And, you know, we wanted it to be alive and fun. And a good slice of pizza is a beautiful thing. It's alchemy. It's simple. It's dough, sauce, and cheese. But in the hands of somebody who really gives a damn, it can be an incredible meal. And it may well be the perfect pandemic food, as it turns out.
One of Lee's friends from childhood described him as Hunter S. Thompson meets Clint Eastwood. So you and Lee, your friendship actually began when he called you an anti-Semitic slur in school. How did you go from that to being fast friends and then to being out of touch?
Yes, that is a real time bender. We met in 1973, I had, you know, like many parents who want the best for their children, I was going to public school in the Lower East Side where I'm from, and my parents scraped together, and my mother talked her way into a scholarship for me at a Quaker school, and they were so excited. This is the model, the beacon of tolerance and you know, I don't know, peace. And on the first day of school, a boy named Leeds called me a kike. So my mother was pissed and called his mother up and set up a play date. And that's how we became friends, funny enough. And that's just one of those things where, you know, you never know where life's going to lead you. And tracing the trajectory of our friendship across decades, we collaborated on lots of things. We played in bands together. We made work together. But, you know, it's iconically human for people to drift apart. Some people go forward, some people go backwards, some people go sideways. I don't want to characterize what leads to it. I'll let somebody see the work and come to their own conclusions about all of us. But, you know, I thought it was interesting to make a work about somebody who maybe is not, let's say, worthy of a New York Times obituary or not famous. But at his best, Leeds was a beautiful person. He lived a poetic life. He really attended to detail, and he didn't put himself forward in front of others. He really loved people and loved going on adventures. And that's kind of what we did. We used to hang out and treat New York like a road trip. And before Google and before the internet, if you wanted to see something, you had to get out of bed, hit the sidewalk, and go there and check it out for yourself. And, you know, there's something lost in that sense of time that we don't have that anymore. We can just instantaneously do something or find something in three or four clicks. But back then, you know, you had to schlep all the way out to deep, dark Staten Island or the edge of Brooklyn to go find a slice. It's a good excuse to hang out with your friends, to take a little trip and to see something and meet some people that you might not otherwise.
During the course of the movie, we follow you as you start to investigate what Leeds' life had become. He dies at a young age due to complications from alcoholism. And you speak to family members. You speak to former lovers. What were you trying to investigate about your friend and your friendship? Also now with the knowledge of time, you're a grown-up. You've got kids. You had a whole different kind of life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of a grown-up. you know, yes, I thought it was interesting, you know, instead of just making a straight thing, I thought it was interesting, and I started this in my last film, Missing People, to trace the story of maybe two people or two families across time that may have intersected by intent or by circumstance at one point, and to find them again decades later. So I thought an interesting conceit would be to go find Andrew Bellucci, who we filmed at Lombardi's in 1995, to find out what happened to him. And the last time, in fact, we saw him was in prison after we had shot at Lombardi's, which is in part one and part two of the series. And, you know, I thought it was an interesting conceit to sort of set these stories in parallel tracks. What happened? Who are you? Who do you think you're going to be, and who do you become, and how do you reconcile those two? So that's the benefit of both time and also a series, which is closer to a novel. It allows you to go back and forth in time and go deep with character. And, you know, the work is kind of open-ended so that you see these three characters and you're thinking, what do they have to do with each other? You know, I don't get it. And then maybe a little further on down the road, you begin to understand the symmetries or the differences. And often, they're between class. My last film was about class, race, and art, and memory, and murder. This film is about class, memory, maybe self-invention, family curses, and pizza.
Untitled Pizza Movie is running at Metrograph from February 26th to March 14th, viewable with the purchase of a Metrograph digital membership. We'll have more with David Shapiro after the break. This is All of It. My guest this hour is David Shapiro. His new project is Untitled Pizza Movie, a seven-part series running at Metrograph from February 26th to March 14th. David, before the break, you mentioned Andrew Bellucci. He's one of the pizza guys that you focus on early on. He's a big talker. He's psyched to be in front of the camera, which turns out to be really interesting because he had embezzled a lot of money from a law firm. Was it when he was working at Lombardi's or before?
It was before Lombardi's, but the remarkable thing was here was this guy who was the face of Lombardi's at the dawn of the kind of pizza revolution when the early 90s New York was transforming this humble food into a Michelin quality product. And he was spearheading it, and he became the face of it. Food critics were going to his place like filaments to a magnet because this guy just made the best pizza. And he was great. He was garrulous. He was charismatic. He could talk to you about pizza for 10 hours, and he did on our cameras. And we showed up, and we were kind of, you know, bullshitting him, and he was doing the same in reverse.
This is All of it, WNYC. My guest is David Shapiro, and we're talking about Untitled Pizza Movie. We had to drop out there, public radio. So he was he was talking to you, and he was in the New York Times, and you have New York Times journalists talking about how great he was. Meanwhile, he's this embezzler.
You're right. Well, meanwhile, he had a complex history, let's say. And I don't want to give it all away because sure. I do want you to watch Untitled Pizza Movie at Metrograph, but I will say that, he was wanted by the FBI for embezzlement. But at the same time, here he was doing this massive amount of publicity for the Times, for Esquire, for New York Magazine, you know, like a rising star of New York. And I'm not sure what he was thinking, but shortly after we shot with him, the FBI entered his pizzeria, Lombardi's, ordered a pie, and then placed him under arrest. And so the last time we were speaking with him was in prison, and Leeds and I couldn't have predicted that was where the story would go, but, you know, that's life, and that's sort of New York. It's filled with left and right turns you can't possibly see. And so we decided to follow him as the story, and the film got abandoned. And to your point earlier, you know, friends drift apart, and when Leeds died, I thought of two things. One is that first lunch that we had together and why and how we became friends. And the second, oddly enough, is what happened to Andrew Bellucci?
And we get to find out in the film. It was the part that was really amazing to me, and I think it shows the challenges of making films 20 years ago, is you guys end up getting to talk to him while he's in prison. But it's really interesting the way you lay it out, because it's phone messages and, you know, there's no internet. There's no sending emails. The person has to call you back. You have to call them back. It was just really a sort of a time capsule of what it was like to try to communicate at that time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Allison. This is, you know, part of this work is like a Russian nesting doll, right? Like the big one. It houses a lot of different types of documentaries. And one of them is a pizza mentory, you could say. Another one is how technology changed so rapidly across 25 years. When I started this, we had these clunky cameras from The Wiz. And you're right, in order to get permission, it was a letter back and forth. It could be a month, it could be 2 months. In fact, it took 4 months, I think, to get permission there. But now it's just a click or a text. And the whole sense of time, our time is so different than, you know, what it used to be. If you and I were going to meet, I mean, maybe this was a little later, but you would say, hey, meet me at, you know, 14th Street at 5 o'clock. And the only thing you could check was your watch or a clock on the building. There was no way to communicate. And so if somebody's late or somebody's early, so all those things come up and bubble up. And so the work kind of absorbs how information was captured and how the sense of time is fractured, and brings it full circle to this moment, which is a bizarre one, where we're all kind of disconnected and really struggling to find ways to stay, to make it, really. And one of them is wonderfully speaking with you. Another one of these weird Zoom calls we all have. But, you know, we're just trying to wait it out. And so the work kind of absorbs that over decades as a means to show how quickly things are moving. And the sort of flip side of technology is it moves so quick that you can't remember things. And the things that you forget are people. And in this time of loss on a massive scale, I wanted to slow the world down and look at it and see it's both its beauty and the sort of danger and the red flags of technology and quote unquote progress. The question becomes, for whom?
My guest is David Shapiro. The name of his work is Untitled Pizza Movie. So I want people to understand that it isn't like a linear documentary. It has a very specific aesthetic,
right,
and a look to it. You're also a fine artist who's had gallery shows and you've taught. And it's interesting, sort of there's interstitials. And I'll just give one example, is you have this white turntable on a psych and you put objects on it that sort of illuminate certain points or punctuate certain ideas or sound bites. Did you always know it was going to look like this? Like,
yeah,
it was going to look like a collage, kind of, and then some documentary and then more collage?
Well, I knew it was going to be living in the fault lines between forms, between, like, you know, classical biography, between sort of some elements of an autobiography, between a collagist piece. But I employed one of the forms I came upon right away was representing memories almost as objects, as touchstones. So if somebody sent me an email or if Lee sent an email, I would make it into a physical object and film it. And I filmed it in a kind of very formal, classical way. The point is that, you know, if you lay out all your memories or your touchstones to your memories, let's say Allison's touchstones on a conveyor belt, what would it look like going from, you know, 1970 till now? And what would they be? And the sort of, maybe the crappy things we keep are to somebody else look like nothing, but to us they mean the world. And it's kind of like, you know, on one hand this is Proust, it's the Madeleine, and on another it's pizza. And so here are these objects that go through the work that represent three memories, three sets of memories, three families' memories. And it's kind of fun, and also, unlike a lot of, you know, standard boilerplate docs, this has no JPEGs in it. Everything is filmed in camera. It's a real object. There's thousands of things in the work over the course of the 7 parts. And the fun thing for me was, like a serial piece, like an episode, it has credits. So I use the credits to re-show the objects so that you know, I always wanted to come back and be alive and have the work think and be aware you're watching this. And so when you get to the end, maybe you can see the objects again that you just saw in the part and you kind of re-remember them. You think, oh, there's that yellow phone. I know what that was. That was the call that Mrs. Shapiro made to Mrs. Atkinson saying, why'd you call my son an anti-Semitic slur? And so it becomes a kind of fun way of activating the piece and of talking about memory and really also talking about filmmaking, because filmmaking is sequential. It's a series of shots, and how and when you put them and in what order determines how you're storytelling. And so I thought it was an inventive and fun way of telling a story.
You get very personal about your own life, about your upbringing, your family, Leeds's family, grappling with your friend's death. What was a difficult aspect to talk about in this film for you?
Well, I think it's kind of horrifying to put yourself in a work in a lot of ways, especially if you've got hair down to your ass and you're wearing like polyester shirts with butterfly collars. And, you know, you step back and you're like, what was I thinking? But it's hard to see yourself, and it's hard to sort of grapple with who you think you were and who you thought you'd become. And I wanted to do that in an honest, fun way. And I also wanted to play around with the fiction and even the idea that we're different people over decades. Like, people called me Dave then, and some people still do. But David is what I go by now. Maybe you were Allie once, and now you're Allison. Maybe you're still Allie to certain people. And so the people that you are over decades can have a kind of conversation. Andrew was Andy. Leeds was always Leeds.
The name of the film, the project, is Untitled Pizza Movie. It's a 7-part series. It runs at Metrograph from February 26th to March 14th, viewable with the purchase of a Metrograph digital membership. It is delightful. David Shapiro, thanks for being on my show.
Allison Stewart, thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to speak with you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.